We're doing Nehemiah 7 this morning, and we'll break that down. I'm going to do the second half of it next week. But at the moment, we're into Nehemiah 7. But I think one of the most vulnerable places, believe it or not, that you can be in is right after a victory, isn't it? Often we put so much energy into sort of getting across the line, into getting something to happen. But where we are most vulnerable so many times is right after a victory, when you finally got there. We got any footy players here? You would know, professional football players particularly, because they have more money to have a bigger party. But professional football players are incredibly vulnerable, aren't they, at the end of season's trip. You know, you can get this guy that sets the world on fire. He's in the headlines, and right after the victory, in the celebrations, in that end of season trip, they do something that can sometimes be a career-ending move in those moments, because we are actually vulnerable after the victory. And all of us have those highs and lows in our life, and we've got to understand that sometimes we can be vulnerable after victory. At the moment, as a church, we've had that great news. We've signed the contract, and we're full steam ahead towards a fantastic location in Moona. What an opportunity! And for me, there was even a sense, as we've worked so hard to get to that point, you know, when finally that offer was accepted, you know, there's a sense of wow. And we should be praising God. We should be celebrating in that moment. But also to understand that in those moments, there's often a vulnerability that we've got to be aware of. So we can be vulnerable in those places. It's so easy to drop your guard when you celebrate and enjoy the victory. And often it's a time where our focus and our awareness and our intensity can switch, leaving us very vulnerable. So Nehemiah was very aware of this in chapter 7. And basically it starts, he says, you know, the walls were complete. We had the gates in, and it was like, wow, job done. And it was amazing. They got done in 52 days what they'd been scratching around and been trying to make happen in about 70 years. It was fantastic. But he doesn't actually rest in that place. Yeah, they celebrate. And if you read through the chapter, you find that they have an incredible celebration. But he's actually very aware that in that point, that city, even though it's got its walls up, it's got its gates in, it's actually in a very, very vulnerable place. And he actually draws their attention to that. So Nehemiah realized that. And he realized that we are vulnerable after victory. And I think we're often most vulnerable on the mountaintop. And when you think about a mountaintop, there's not a lot of protection on the mountaintop, is there? That's right. Mountaintops are a fantastic place to visit. I love riding my bike when I get a chance and the weather's right. I love to actually ride my bike to the top of Mount Wellington. It's hard work getting there, but it's a great sense of achievement when you get to the top. And there is this aha, wow moment, you know, on a beautiful day where you actually get to see the city of Hobart. You get to get perspective over where everything is. You get to see the way that it sort of horseshoes around the mountain. You actually get to see how close together everything is as you look down on it. And you can actually see, oh yeah, that's there and that's there. And I live over there and it's not actually that far from that. And you get an amazing perspective on the mountaintop. But the difference being, After the She Conference, we took a couple of the girls that were guests of the She Conference up to the top of Mount Wellington because they wanted to look, as visitors often do. And it was amazing because we got up there and the wind was about 100 kilometres an hour or more probably. And it was absolutely hammering. And Alex was driving and we sort of pulled up at the visitor centre area there and we jumped out of the car and I sort of said to them, and Alex went to park the car, I said to the other girl, I said, do you want to just go, you know, straight into the viewing area? And they said, no, we want to experience this. And we walked them down the rampway to the first viewing platform. And literally, you know, they were hanging on to the rail because they actually felt like they were going to be lifted off and, you know, dumped somewhere down in the city below. And it was that sort of thing. And you know, our hair was going, and it was a really, really wild experience. It was crazy, but it was actually a lot of fun. And they laughed there, they laughed hysterically all the way down, because, you know, it was just this heightened experience. But often the mountaintop brings a heightened experience, but there's nobody, to my knowledge, that actually lives on top of Mount Wellington. You know, there are little huts there and things like that, but nobody has actually settled down and made themselves a nice little life on the top of Mount Wellington. And you look around the mountains all over the place. I've climbed lots of mountains. I love climbing mountains. You know, I've climbed Mount Ossa, the highest point in Tasmania. I've climbed Cradle Mountain. I've climbed Barn Bluff. I've climbed all these different mountains around Tasmania. I want to climb Federation Peak. I haven't done that yet, but it's on my bucket list before I get much older. But, you know, there are things but nobody is going to live on Federation Peak. You know, it takes you a week to get there, and you've got to have the weather right, and you've actually got to rock climb a certain section, and you've got these amazing places of danger, and it's an exhilarating place, but you're not going to live on the mountaintop. God brings, and we need, mountaintop experiences in our life. We actually need to go to the top of the mountain and get perspective. We need to go to the top of the mountain and sometimes experience a sense of euphoria in life about the start and the end of different seasons. But sometimes we think that we perhaps were meant to live on the mountaintop. The mountaintop is a wonderful place, but the mountaintop is an incredible, vulnerable place. You can't live on the mountaintop. And Nehemiah helped these people understand we've just got to a mountaintop place, but let's not park ourselves on the mountaintop, because you are very vulnerable on the top of the mountain. Often we're vulnerable in victory because there's a subtle mindset that we are awesome. Pretty much the same as the football team at the end of the season. There is a sense of we have done something and we are pretty flaming awesome. As you've seen this morning, we deal with small children. And I said to Alex as we drove down our street this morning, as one of them said to the other, do you want to watch how awesome I am at this or whatever it was? It was wanted to show them how he played a game on the iPad or something like that. And, you know, unapologetically said, you know, I just want it. You need to watch this because I am awesome. I said, what an amazing season of life where you can just forget about and you can be just so unguarded about your ego. You can just put it all out there and you can say, I am awesome. And sometimes, though, you know, we get very good at hiding those things, but sometimes in that moment of victory or in that moment of success, we can actually move our perspective and we start to think that we are awesome. And that is probably one of the most vulnerable places that we can be. I read one of the best books I've read on leadership is a book by a guy called Jim Collins, and he's written some really famous books in that area. The first one was Built to Last, and then he did this other one, Good to Great. And Good to Great studied a whole lot of Fortune 500 companies, and they looked at the things that the difference between a good company and a great company, the difference between a company that went along and sort of grew at about the same rate as the market, and then they looked at these great companies, which over a long period of time outstripped the market, you know, sometimes double and triple and that sort of thing. And there were a whole lot of things that they came up with which were quite incredible. One of them was what he called a level 5 leader. But a level 5 leader actually never took the praise himself. A level 5 leader always said, you know, we were lucky. If they were a person of faith, sometimes they say it was the grace of God, and they would actually say, you know, I've got an amazing team, and they would actually deflect the glory to others you know, their team and to God or to circumstances rather than taking it on themselves. And often what he called a level four leader would normally tell you how awesome they were. There was a guy who pulled the Chrysler Corporation out of the proverbial stuff, and he did an amazing job, Lee Iacocca. But he did that for a little while, but he basically spent the rest of his life on the speaking circuit telling everybody how amazing this season was. Now, Chrysler are not on the top of the wave anymore. Chrysler are not in that place anymore. It takes somebody who's actually not taking the glory and putting the glory where it needs to be to actually help something last the test of time. And we've got to make sure that we never get to this place of thinking we're awesome. And then Jim Collins did another book after that because he was so surprised that even some of these great companies fell over during the GFC. And he entitled it How the Mighty Fall. And some of those great companies actually fell. And the one factor that he actually found across all those great companies that hit the wall during that time was what he called hubris. Or no, he doesn't call that. It's a term. But it basically is a sense of ego and believing that you're untouchable. And some of these companies had become so enamored and believed in their own success and had good reason to do so that they just felt like it could never happen to us. The best piece of marriage sort of protection that Alex and I ever had was when we'd only been married, I think about 2 months, some people that we looked up to, who we had a lot of respect for, had a very horrible marriage breakup. You know, it was two couples and the whole thing was yucky. And they were people we respected and had a lot of time for. They were in our lives, they were people of faith. And we were very saddened by that, and parts of our world were shaken when we saw that happen. But what it actually did say to us was, if that could happen to them, it could happen to us. In other words, none of us are actually above these things. We've got to understand that all these things are there as risks and they can happen to us, and we've got to understand that. I think sometimes we just believe that these things won't happen to us, and that's what happened to these companies. So in that moment of victory, we've got to just understand that we're not awesome, our God is awesome. We've got to understand that, you know, we actually are not able to carry high levels of praise. Yeah, that's right. You know, in this day and age, we talk about praising and encouraging our children. I totally believe in that. But you know what? If we praise almost in the wrong way, excessively, we're actually not able to carry that. And I've seen that even as a leader sometimes. I've publicly lifted somebody up and encouraged and you know, out of a good heart. And whatever else is going on in their life at the time, they've been unable to actually carry that level of praise. You know, because at the end of the day, I'm not saying stop encouraging people. Don't hear that. Encourage more and more and more and more. But what I am saying is if we're seeking praise and we're taking it on and there's this sense of, wow, you know what, we are vulnerable in that place because God is the only one that is able to carry praise and is worthy of praise. So that's why we actually deflect and we give Him the praise and the glory and understand that we haven't become awesome. There's a tendency to let our guard down in that place of victory, whether it's through hubris, as I've just been talking about, fatigue or a perceived lack of risk. We just need to be careful not to let our guard down. It says this in Nehemiah 7, 1-3. It says, after the wall was finished, I'd set the doors and the gates and the gatekeepers. Sorry, I'll start that again. After the wall was finished and I had set the doors in, the gates, the gatekeepers, singers, and Levites were appointed. I gave the responsibility of governing Jerusalem to my brother Hananiah, along with Hananiah, the commander of the fortress, for he was a faithful man who feared God more than most. I said to them, "Do not leave the gates open during the hottest part of the day. And even while the gatekeepers were on duty, have them shut and bar the doors. Appoint residents of Jerusalem to act as guards. Everyone on watch, everyone on a regular watch. Some will serve as sentry posts and some in front of their own homes." So what did he do? First of all, he established an order that would bring protection to the city. And if there is something that sometimes in our Pentecostal churches we actually forget about, is there is actually an order that God has put in place for our protection. And you know what? Good discipleship and some of the real practical things actually brings a great order for our protection. In other words, we've actually got to do some practical stuff that actually protects us at a spiritual level. And the first thing that Nehemiah did is he actually established good order in the city. He actually put gatekeepers in place and said, "Okay, the gates are here, and we're going to understand, we're going to manage who goes in, who goes out. We're going to do that. We're going to have sentry posts so people can see what's going on." And then he actually established good governance in the city. He appointed his brother as the governor, and he appointed Hananiah, who was a military guy who could actually take on the governance of the city. He put those things in place. It's real practical stuff, but it actually set some things in place that enabled the prosperity of the city. So firstly, he addressed the practical. The thing I want to say about the practical is good routine and wise planning offers us a good level of protection. I've personally been on a full-on journey the last couple of years, as a lot of you know. And I'll be really open and honest with you right now. I understand that I'm vulnerable. I actually understand that my emotional capacity is not on the mountaintop. And I've shared this with people. What does it mean? It means that in that time, I don't actually fear that. But I'm aware of it. And what it means is that there are certain things about, in that moment, that routine actually becomes quite important. That you just keep doing the stuff that you know protects you. You know, for me, I keep riding my bike, yeah, because I like it, but it also keeps me fit. It keeps my head in the right place. It actually pedals out a whole lot of stuff that I'm carrying. And the routine of that actually keeps me physically fit and mentally fit. It actually keeps me in a place that then when I go to God and I actually work out my spiritual, that I'm actually in a place to receive. I'm in a place where that can actually work. And regardless of how I'm feeling, those routines are important. As we've gone on a journey of dealing with children that have had all sorts of things to deal with, we have come to understand, as a kid, I just thought this was stupid, as you do as children. But you know, as we had people help us and talk to us about what is required, you know, when kids walk through trauma and stuff like that, you know, they would keep saying, routine, 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 routine. It is going to bore the life out of you, but it is going to establish security in their life. And sometimes, you know, we've got you're doing your quiet time and you're not getting anything out of it. It's boring. Just keep doing the routine. Just keep doing the routine. There will be breakthrough in that place, but we've actually got to establish some practical routine that actually sets us up and protects us through difficult and challenging and exciting seasons. Let's make sure that we keep the practical working so that we can actually engage in the spiritual at a much greater level. He appointed gatekeepers. Gates are access points, aren't they? They let people and perhaps animals in and out. Gates help with security, but they're also a vulnerable point. Sometimes at our house, I feel like we live in a wildlife park, and that's just inside the house. If we didn't have, if it wasn't, you know, if it wasn't just a little bit crazy, a little while back we where's Alex? I can talk about her. Yeah, I know. I set you guys up because I say I don't tell Alex, and every time I do that, people are just itching to get out the door. They can't wait. Anyway, one morning we'd been talking about getting a dog for a long time, and one morning, it was a day off, and see what happens when you're out of routine. And she started trawling through the gum tree and so forth, thinking, oh yeah, we'll get a dog. And anyway, we find this dog and we get the dog, and it's a little puppy. And puppies are always so cute, aren't they? And this one, like your own child, has been particularly cute. And so we buy the thing, and that's all good. And I had sort of some reservation about it, but only because of the breed. But I actually agreed and said yep. So it's a border collie kelpie cross. So it's a very, very energetic dog. And actually, I'm pleased to say it's going to be a good dog. He's coming along well. But you know, we've had mayhem inside the house. With you know, children and dogs, they can heighten each other to extreme levels. And they both love it. But that's only inside the house. Outside the house, you can drive up to our house, and honestly, you think you're at Bonnerong Park. There is just so many wallabies, and predominantly wallabies and other animals, just all over the road and up and down the streets and everywhere. And there's a house with a big area out the front of it down the road from our house, probably about a 3-acre paddock out the front. And you can as you're driving up, you can look in there, and there will be you know, perhaps 30 or 40 big-sized wallabies, you know. I'm talking as big as Bennett wallabies get. About that big, you know, just all eating that grass. Anyway, I put a lot of work last year into sowing a front lawn. And I really got it working, got it happening. And, you know, don't get complacent on the mountaintop. So, you know, I'm looking at it and it's sort of looking okay. It was a little bit harder to get going than the back one. The back one's been amazing, but you know, the front one, and then we get hit with that really hot weather when we had the bushfires and that hit it, and then the wallabies just came in their droves, and I'm sitting out on our front veranda, and you can see there that this is why we got a dog, because next season he's going to be out there, and they're going to be gone, and. And they're eating the grass, but I've actually watched really closely out of great personal hurt as I've watched those wallabies eat my lawn. And the way a wallaby eats a lawn is it doesn't just snip the grass up, it pulls it out by the roots. And each time I'm thinking there's another root going, and that's not coming back. And they decimated our front lawn. But it gets worse. The back lawn's going really well, and, you know, the Lord God has protected our back lawn to this point, although the dog's been weeing on it. That's another problem. But so we've got a veggie garden, and the first year we were at this house, the veggie garden went really well, and it had been a bit of a struggle this year with the way the weather was. And we'd put... Alex had planted all these little plants and things that were just coming along real well. And we get up in the morning and they've been completely sheared. Taken out at ground level, completely gone. And we realised we could see that a wallaby had actually been in the yard. Now the back area is fenced and the wallabies don't normally get in. And Alex said, "Did you leave the gate open?" And I said, "No, of course I didn't leave the gate open. I wouldn't leave the gate open." Anyway, and I walk around and one of our side gates is open. And I said, "Alex, somebody's left the gate open." And she said, "Well, it was either me or you, and I didn't leave it open." And I said, "I didn't leave it open." And then I thought about it and realized I left it open. Point is, you can have great protection, but the gates are vulnerable places. And if some clown leaves the gate open, in come the wallabies. And in life, sometimes things are a little bit worse than wallabies. See, Nehemiah created a secure environment inside the city of Jerusalem. They were vulnerable after this amazing victory. And listen to what it says in verse 3. It says, "And even while the gatekeepers are on duty," it says, "have them shut and bar the gates, the doors. Appoint the residents of Jerusalem to act as guards. Everyone on regular watch, so some will serve as sentry posts and some in front of their homes." You know, we've always got to be on guard. See, a gate's a great thing. We've got to have, you know, you've got to have a gate in a city. They needed to bring supplies in. They needed to bring people in. And later on, you find in Nehemiah, they need more people to populate the city and make it work properly. So you've got to have gates. And in our lives, you know, the stuff that we need to take into our life. If you are a closed person, you know, you miss out on so much. If you don't let people close to you, you don't get the encouragement and the life and the vitality and people who walk with you. But you know what? The gate that we carry to our life is an important thing. It lets stuff in and out. And we've got to understand that just as Nehemiah put guards on duty, you're actually in charge of that gate. You're actually in charge of the gateway to your life, and you can have a level of control over what comes in and out. It says this in 1 Peter 5 verse 8. It says, "Stay alert. Watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion looking for somebody to devour." Let's not leave the gate open. So often we wonder why stuff goes wrong in our life, and if you can just look back and say, "Oh, actually, I left the gate open there. You know, I had an opportunity to actually deal with something. I had an opportunity to move that relationship and put it in a place where it should be. And that would have actually closed the gate on a place of vulnerability. Or you know, I had the opportunity to deal with how much I was drinking, but I didn't quite do it, and that left me vulnerable." You know, all those things that we have in our world where we sometimes actually leave the gate open rather than actually shutting it. It's not about barring it. It's just about closing the gate and actually bringing a level of security back to your life. So how do you manage the gateway to your life? See, Nehemiah appointed gatekeepers. It's one thing to build the thing, but he realized that those gates were worth nothing if he didn't have somebody controlling when they opened, how they opened, how much they opened, and while they were open, who actually came in and out. Proverbs gives us an amazing piece of wisdom about how we manage the gateway to our life. And it says this. You'll know this verse, and I think it can't be preached on enough. It can't be overtalked. Proverbs 4:23. "Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life." How do you manage the gateway to your life? Number one, guard your heart. Guard your heart. How do we guard our heart? Well, we've actually got to understand that we've got to be honest with ourselves. When something starts to get in there, you've actually got to deal with it right then when you first get it. When, you know, that sort of offense, that person says something and it's like, oh! You know, at that point, you can actually, we've got the opportunity, and this is really good practical stuff, that we can take every thought captive. What does that mean? It actually means to grab it, roll almost as it comes in, not let it run wild through your heart. When somebody sort of says that half-truth, that thing, that whatever, you've got the moment where you can actually grab it at that point. And you can say, I actually bring that under the authority of God right now. I'm not going to let it infiltrate and penetrate my heart and start to grow like yeast and run wild. I'm actually going to grab it there and then. And I, you see, there is something, because you get an awareness when you start to do that. After a while, we become so desensitized to this stuff that it's just going in and in and in, and it's filling our hearts, and we don't even know what's coming anymore. And we say, Lord, I want to bring that thought under your authority. I'm going to isolate it. I'm going to. It's like you decide that you're going to actually, you're going to put that thought in quarantine. Australia has some of the toughest quarantine laws anywhere, and they serve us pretty well. When you travel, you find it much more annoying getting back into Australia than most other countries. Why do we do that? Because we as a country want to actually guard carefully, you know, our agriculture and some of those things that are really important to us. So we actually quarantine stuff. We grab it. You know what? You can do that with thoughts and things that are said to you. You can actually bring them under the authority of God. Put them aside and say, I'll bring that under the authority of God before it penetrates my heart. And then none of us are perfect, but we let these things in a bit. We all do. And at times you just need, sometimes you actually need to go and visit the heart specialist, don't you? Get a heart checkup. While we were going through our really vulnerable, tough time when we didn't have our children with us, when we were in grief, and a lot of people wouldn't have probably known exactly what it was like, because Alex and I, we were still leading and doing that. But Alex got really worried about me. So what'd she do? She called my good friend Greg Jones in Devonport. She said, I'm worried about Dave. And Greg got in his car and he drove down to Hobart and hung out. What does Greg do? You know Greg. He understood, but he starts to speak life. He starts to take authority over things. He starts to almost do a heart checkup on me and just help me not to be taking those things on that would actually bring bitterness and actually destroy my heart. And as something even shifted in that, we saw a breakthrough only a few weeks later. Don't be scared to have the heart checkup. Sometimes you need someone to come alongside. Sometimes you just need to get before God. David in the Psalms said, "Oh Lord, search my heart. Show me." It's a pretty vulnerable prayer to pray. But my word, you are better off having God show you what's in your heart than having your heart explode all over everybody. You are better off having the Holy Spirit convict you about stuff than having somebody having to come to you and say, hey, or the whole thing playing out rather publicly and being very humiliating. Come on, let's be willing to go to God and get that heart checkup. Oh Lord, show me what's in my heart. Help me deal with those things. Somebody stole my notes. Probably the same person who left the gate open. So how do you manage the gateway to your life? Listen to what Matthew 6:22. It says, a good eye, an eye focused on the light, will fill your whole being with light. A good eye, an eye focused on the light, will fill your whole being with light. And you've probably heard it said, the eyes are the window to your soul. Well, I think it's really interesting. So if we want to manage that gateway to our life, if we want to take control of that, your eyes actually need to focus on the light. So we've got to focus on the light. Isn't that's we all experience coming out of a dark room or a place where there is almost no light, and suddenly you step out into bright light. It's pretty confronting, isn't it? You know, you're in there and your eyes have adjusted. I used to find that over the years, I've spent a lot of time in the darkness, and I'm actually talking probably both, but I'm actually talking literally. But you know, so often I've been out working on machines and things like that, trying to find problems in the dark, and it is so hard to find stuff in the dark. You can miss something when you're groveling around with a little torch, and all of a sudden I've been out working on things, you know, very early in the morning and trying to find problems, and I'm going, you know, over and over something, I haven't been able to find it yet, and all of a sudden the sun comes up and you actually get natural light, and within moments you actually find what you're looking for, because you can actually, it's illuminated at a whole greater level. But the other thing too about being in the dark is that it is confronting for our eyes, and our eyes actually get reasonably good at working in the dark. It's amazing when your eyes adjust how much you can actually see, you know, if there's a little bit of light there from the moon or the stars or whatever. It's amazing what you can see because your pupils open up and they take in a whole lot of information, and it's amazing what you can see in the dark. But I think sometimes we actually get so used to living in the darkness that we're scared of the light. We get so used to having almost that thing like the light becomes too confronting. And you know, when you first get out of a dark room and you come into the light, you know, you cover your eyes and you look down and you can't look up. But as soon as your pupils adjust again and starts to work, well, you can start to look up, and then you can actually start to look up into the sky. Even without sunglasses, you can actually manage that, because your eyes adjust. And I think so often we haven't let ourselves adjust to the light so that we don't focus on the light and we find ourselves looking into the darkness. If we want to manage the gateway to our life, we've got to focus on the light. Focus on the light. How do you manage the gateway to your life? Number three. Always praise. Always praise. Praise and worship is not limited to a platform and some guitars that can lead us in that. Our team did wonderfully this morning, but our praise and worship should never be limited to that. Our praise and worship should not be limited to when we've had a victory. Our praise and worship shouldn't be limited to when we're desperate before God and we've just got to get to we should always be in that place. But you know what? Sometimes, you know, natural circumstances make us so desperate. Oh, I'm going to go to God. Our praise and worship should be something that goes on always. Our victories should lead us deeper and deeper into praising God. If our praise and worship of God is deepening, then I think our victories actually deepen. If our praise and worship of God deepens, then our victories deepen. How do you praise when you've had crappy news? How do you praise when you've just got that news that you or somebody else has got cancer? How do you praise when you lose a loved one? How do you praise when your career falls off the rails? How do you praise when a relationship breaks down? How do you praise in those places? I'm going to give you a real honest answer. Not easily. Not easily. Because we're wired to go the other way. Anyone that's done a bit of athletic type stuff, how do you train when you're out of form? Not easily. It's hard. But what I can tell you about that, because I've had enough crashes and things on my bike to have to come back from all that stuff, is that if you keep doing it, you have breakthrough. I've been out when I can think of this time after I'd had a broken collarbone, when I'd be out riding and thinking, how long is it going to take to get this form back? How long is it going to take? Every time I go out with the guys, it's so hard, you know, they're dropping me, and it's just, you feel like, I don't want to even do this anymore. It's hard. And then all of a sudden, you know, from one day to the next, you know, I'm riding along and I'm thinking, oh, it feels like my form's back. I can do this. It's a lot easier. And it feels like the breakthrough just happened in that morning. But it didn't. It happened in every single morning I chose to get up. It happened every time I got up. It happened every time I just kept pushing up a hill when I wasn't enjoying it, when it was hard. You know, if you're going to praise God when you get the news of cancer, it's not easy. If you're going to praise God when you've had a breakup, if you're going to praise God when you feel deflated, you know, it's not easy, but you will get a breakthrough. You will get a breakthrough. Because, you know, we praise always. We praise all the time. We praise when it's not hard, when it is so hard. If you keep doing that, you will find it'll be hard. And then one day it's bang, breakthrough. And the breakthrough wasn't in the moment. The breakthrough was in every time you said, I'm going to praise God. The breakthrough was every time that you said, no, no, devil, not today. No, no, devil, not today. No, no, devil, not today. I will praise. I won't take the praise on. You know what? God, you're bigger than this thing, so I will praise you in that. You know, when you've had the victory, God, you're bigger than me. I'm not awesome. You're awesome, so I will praise you in that place. Let's continue to praise always. A true victory with a true God leads us to a sweeter spirit and a deeper praise. When I was talking about guarding your heart, praise guards your heart. If the team want to join me, please. We've got so much to thank God for as a church at this time. We've got so much to thank God for as individuals at this time. But I'm also aware at this time, as you know, sometimes we can be all together, oh wow, we're on a bit of a mountaintop, but then there are people that are right in the valley. Everything that I've said this morning applies whether you're on the mountaintop or in the valley. When you're in the valley too, you're very vulnerable to what comes in and out of your heart. Let's guard our heart because it is the wellspring of life. Let's decide that we're going to take control over what comes in and out. We're actually going to have, like, it's that gatekeeper there. It's like, you know, sometimes you can just in that place, you know, you can start talking to somebody and it sort of feels okay, but you just, you know, you're starting to gossip and you're starting to drag down and you're going into that place, and sometimes you've got to say, you're just going to make that choice. Okay, the gate's shutting. I need to be somewhere else, or I've got to stop this conversation right now, or I've just got to make a move. I've shut the gate. The eyes are the windows to our soul. Are we taken in light? Or are we binging on Netflix? You know, it's nothing wrong with that in its level. This is what normally happens to me if I've been really, really busy. You know, you need that time to chill. And I often sit back and watch, you know, watch some TV shows or something I'm in. And then you sort of do it again the next night. But I've sort of learned enough to go, when I've fallen asleep twice in a row on the couch, actually I've got to make change. The eyes are the window to our soul. What is it? What is it we take in? That stuff's pretty straightforward and easy. But you know what? What are we actually looking to for our inspiration? Do our eyes go to the Word of God? Do our eyes go to those places? Do our eyes go to those places of inspiration? Do our eyes actually look up and see our God? Look at somebody who's struggling, don't you? And our demeanor is always, head down. Sure, I don't want to look up too much because I don't know whose eyes I'm going to catch. I don't know if I can. I don't know if I want to have that conversation. I don't know if I want to be in that place. And our focus goes down. I want to encourage you in that. I'm talking figuratively, but maybe you're struggling in that place. Why don't you shift your gaze, not just a little bit, but move it up just that bit more and allow it to actually connect with a God who loves you. A God who actually tells you you are amazing. A God who says he's not going to let you go. A God who actually wants to fill your whole being with light. Right now, some people here this morning, and I'm going to encourage you just to stand right now and move your gaze to the light. And it feels a bit scary. Some of you feel like you might be stepping out of that dark room. You're not having to come in contact with anybody that you don't want to. It's just like, okay, you know what? There is an appointment right now for you to connect with a loving God who actually wants to fill your life with light. Just as the team leaders right now, I'm just going to give you opportunity. Just stay sitting down. And this isn't for everybody, but there's some people here, and I just want you to make that choice this morning. That you know how important it is. You know the vulnerabilities that we carry in all sorts of different seasons of life. And right now you need to fix your gaze. And let those eyes focus on the light, on Jesus.